You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist.
This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives.
That was your last time saying that. I'm sorry. I'm not going to say stuff the whole time because I'm not going to cry.
No, I am going to cry.
Yeah.
For sure.
But we have two episodes to get through.
Yeah. I'm really struggling. I was really struggling writing my notes. It's very sad. So I'm going to try and make it through this episode with as few tears as possible.
Yeah.
No guarantees on the full length.
Right. I was like expecting in my head when I was taking notes. I'm like, I feel like it's okay if we go a little long. Whatever. Yeah. You know, we're just going to like let ourselves go today.
Yeah. We're doing the best we can.
I would say I'll hold your hand through it, but we have champagne and a phone and we're a little far away. It's kind of hard to like hold hands.
Yeah. It's sad. You know, I'm struggling with it. You know, my routine has been the same for almost every week. I mean, there have been moments where we've taken a week or two off here or there.
There was like one time that we took like 2 months off and that was our longest stretch of like not doing anything.
Right.
So it's been pretty constant for like, it's been over 4.5 years now because our anniversary was January.
Yes. So, you know, you get into habits of like, I know when I need to start my notes. I know how to structure everything.
Yep.
And I was writing my notes today and it's just like, I don't know when I'm going to do this next. It's
well, okay. I said this at the end of the episode last week too. Like I'm going to pull you whenever I can onto a microphone. So while like this is like the last official whatever, like I'll make you do notes and research in the future, like if that's what you want.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, like once every couple months, I'll be like, psst, you want to do it? Come on.
Oh gosh, I know that this isn't like the end. I'll be back to guest or, you know, whenever you need me for anything or but it's still sad. Anyway, okay. We still have a job to do. I did want to talk about the fact that it is hurricane season right
now. Who is it ever?
Yeah, so hurricanes have been raging throughout Florida, Puerto Rico, Cuba, and the Dominican Republic. Hurricane Ian made landfall on Florida's southwestern coast. It's a near Category 5 hurricane. It was near Category 5 strength on Wednesday afternoon. With sustained winds of up to 150 miles per hour and like massive storm surges, it knocked out the power and killed at least two people in Cuba during that very first
terrible
storm surge. Yes. Over a million in Florida have lost electricity so far, while the city of Fort Myers took a near direct hit as Ian blew ashore, with footage showing houses in the area detached from their foundations and drifting in the flood.
It looks like a ghost town in some of those cities. Like, it's really sad how a lot of these places have either, I was watching it on the Weather Channel earlier today. We were like, some good non-biased news. Yes, just the Weather Channel.
Pure weather. All weather all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. And the first anchor was in an area that was like super flooded. And then, like, you know, over to you, Jen. And she was like in a very dry but windy, windy area. Like, we were looking at completely uprooted trees into homes and things like that. Did you have the experience growing up in the Midwest with a lot of like tornado drills and tornadoes and stuff?
Yes.
I never experienced like a full touchdown tornado, but we would get like big funnel clouds that would still fuck shit up.
Yeah. Very scary.
Did you ever get like a full like tornado?
So not in the area where we lived. So in the area where we lived in Springfield, for some reason, tornadoes just didn't really hit that part.
You were
of
right
town.
Off Tornado Alley. They couldn't veer.
It's like it would hit the south side of town more often, or it would hit like towns kind of further east of us. But where we were, it didn't really hit. But we still got, because it was hitting in other parts of the city.
Right, you got the winds.
Yeah, and we still got the warnings, like all of the tornado sirens. And we still, when I first moved to the Midwest, I still did the like go into the basement kind of thing.
We had a fruit cellar. It was like a tiny, like I never went in there unless I had to. And it was terrifying, but it was like a tiny little shed that was completely, you know, surrounded in concrete and things like that that would keep us safe. But it's so funny because like, you know how most kids, when they watch The Wizard of Oz growing up, it's like the flying monkeys or the witch that scares them? Yep. It was tornadoes for me. Like living through the Midwest, being a fan of The Wizard of Oz, hearing a tornado siren, I would immediately start sobbing and be in panic because I was like, this is death to us all.
Well, tornadoes are really scary because they're so kind of like unpredictable. Like they can kind of go anywhere.
Right.
You know what I mean? And like they could hit and completely destroy one house and the house
they're
next
moving
to
around
it,
and
be completely fine, you know. So it, that is one thing about tornadoes. Hurricanes, now I've never experienced a hurricane,
neither have I. The water aspect of that is very terrifying to me.
Power of water, and also I think it is a little less unpredictable in terms of like, if it's coming, it's coming for the entire area. It's not like it's gonna hit one house and not hit another house. Like, it's flooding huge, massive areas, and like the destruction that water can do to your infrastructure, like the fact that it's taking down power lines, you know, is...
Oh, I've seen videos of people's furniture floating out the front door.
Yes.
It's terrible.
So they're calling it a 500-year flood event. 911 centers in the area have been just completely inundated with callers who are experiencing life-threatening emergencies. They're stuck in their attics because they just kept going up and up and up in their houses.
Oh, my God.
Or they're stuck on the roofs of buildings.
Yeah.
And the exact number of injuries and fatalities is not known right now, but I do know that the storm kind of subsided slightly, and then today, just now, it got bumped back up to like hurricane status. So it's bad again, and the number of deaths is climbing as they're figuring out like just how bad it is.
Yeah.
So obviously, this is devastating. Meanwhile, as Hurricane Ian batters Florida, Puerto Ricans who are still suffering power and water outages from Hurricane Fiona, which was earlier this month, fear that they're going to be forgotten in the wake of Hurricane Ian and the devastation that's happening in Florida. Right. So in addition to the recent devastation in Puerto Rico, Puerto Ricans are still experiencing lingering effects from the damages from Hurricane Maria back in 2017. You remember whenever Trump was like throwing...
I remember Lin-Manuel Miranda being around a lot during that time. He did a lot of like raising awareness for it and things like
Hamilton
that.
Was still kind of like a big deal. And, and it was like Trump went down there and remember he was just like throwing paper towels at people. And he drew that Sharpie map where he was where he was like, this
oh my God, I forgot about that.
He just redrew the map and he's just like, see, it's not a problem. It's like, just because you draw Sharpie on something doesn't make it not an issue anymore.
It just sucks because like, I want to laugh at that, but it's so
real people.
Devastating. It's the same thing with the first thing I thought of when I heard that the hurricane's name was Ian. I just pictured a big frat boy wreaking havoc.
Yeah, I mean.
Redacted.
Cutting it out.
On your last episode, just like dropping.
About to flame everybody.
You're, what's the word for it? You're doxing people just left and right. Mm-hmm.
Like with Maria, Puerto Rico, despite being a U.S. territory, has been slow to receive federal aid. Many locals in communities that were hit hardest by the hurricane fear that the recovery needs, the like undeniable necessary recovery needs in Florida, will shift attention and resources away from Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Power
and
is,
that would make sense, honestly. Yeah,
absolutely. Power is still out for 20% of Puerto Rican customers and unstable for those who do have it. 20%, that's a huge amount.
Yeah.
Water outages, partly due to lack of electricity, continue to affect a lot of residents there. Hospitals are operating on backup generators because of unsteady power and like running out of fuel. It's really awful. And it's exacerbated by the fact that more than 43% of Puerto Rico's residents live below the poverty line.
Yeah.
Which is three times the U.S. average. Mm. So this has complicated the recovery from Fiona because they don't have basic necessities like food and water and hygiene supplies. And those things have continued to be difficult to obtain since Maria. So we've had like years and years of it being difficult there already. Biden's administration has promised to support the people of Puerto Rico and to continue to support them, but a lot of people have criticized not only their slow response, but also the fact that the government did not shore things up after Maria. Like, they're like, we experienced this once, and there was all this outcry.
Fool me once, shame on me.
Yeah, you said you were going to do all this stuff to make sure this didn't happen again, and here we are. So many mutual aid and humanitarian groups have stepped in to assist those in need and workers on the ground in Florida throughout the Caribbean. So if you want to help, I'll put some links in the show notes.
Excellent.
For those who are suffering in Florida, you can donate to Disaster Relief at Work. It's a Michigan-based nonprofit that currently is on the ground in Florida providing relief. They accept cash donations as well as donations for specific buckets of essential supplies.
Nice.
So you can donate to those. And Convoy of Hope is another one there in Florida, in Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic. They have Project Hope, and it's been working in Puerto Rico since Hurricane Maria and is continuing recovery efforts all the way, like all throughout the Caribbean.
Okay.
And the Hispanic Federation has also been on the ground in Puerto Rico supplying aid in the wake of Hurricane Fiona. There are also GoFundMes that have been set up. GoFundMe has a list of verified fundraisers on behalf of families and villages in the Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico. And there are also a lot of nonprofits, including Direct Relief, that are specifically helping those in Cuba. So I will put all of those in our show notes. If you are able to, if you feel so inclined, please go check those out and donate.
Yeah. I wanted to kind of piggyback off of what I talked about last week. And I wanted to talk a little bit about an update of what's going on in Iran because the protests are still raging over there. First thing I wanted to point out, it doesn't really have to do with anything else, but in a New York Times article that I was reading, it mentioned that Mahsa was the first person in her immediate family to reject the hijab, which I just found very interesting. Mm-hmm. Other than that, that's not really attached to anything else. But
it is interesting. I mean, it's indicative of the fact that like younger generations are wanting to break these cycles, wanting to be able to make decisions about their own life, and they don't necessarily want to stick to tradition in the same way as previous generations.
Yeah.
That's a universal experience right now, I think.
You know? Exactly. The woman who first brought Masa's story into the light, Nilafor Hamedi, was arrested last week and is being held in solitary confinement at Evin Prison. Like, can you imagine?
No.
According to Iran Human Rights, as of September 25th, at least 54 people have been killed and hundreds of women have been detained and abused by authorities. I tried to do a little bit of digging into the treatment of the prisoners and things like that, and I wasn't really able to find any information at the moment, but this is definitely a story that's still unfolding. But I can only imagine what these people are going through in these prisons. The government of Iran has attempted to suppress the protests by shooting protesters with birdshot and metal pellets, deploying tear gas and water cannons, and blocking access to many apps such as Instagram and WhatsApp, which limits protesters' ability to organize.
Yeah, you see that so often now. I feel like people really understand. You saw it in Russia as well, right? Like, people really understand the power of social media and the power of like community and online community and are able for the first time to kind of tell their own stories to the wider world. And they shut that shit down
real fast.
Real fast.
Yeah. This is something that has been used before. There was an article that I read that was an opinion piece for the Washington Post that was called "Women Are Leading a Revolution in Iran. When Will Western Feminists Help?" And it was a really, really good article. Mm. And I wanted to just touch on one part that she was talking about, which ties into what you said, is that this revolution is held by a lot of unveiled women right now. And the author of that article says they have overcome fear and are challenging one of the main pillars of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the compulsory hijab. So I wanted to do a little bit of reading into that about the history of the mandatory hijab and just a little bit about all of that kind of stuff and where everybody stands, just because it's not really something that is in my experience to be educated on. 2 years after the ultra-conservative Muslim clerics seized power in 1979, they required women in government offices to wear the headscarf, then all women and girls over the age of 9. It proclaimed that the hijab would protect female chastity and honor. Now, there's been a secretive survey that's been taken throughout the years by the Group for Analyzing and Measuring Attitudes in Iran, which found that about 57% of people disagreed with the mandatory practice of wearing a hijab. Their 2022 survey on political systems showed that about 67% of the target population of literate adults are against a political system governed by religious law. So this is something that is what a lot of the women in Iran are fighting against right now. And a lot of their leaders have really made them feel very unsafe. And there are also a number of women's issues that they are bringing up throughout these protests as well. In 2020, Iran's government leader, Ali Khamenei,
I think is...
Right? Yeah.
I think so.
Was quoted saying, "Improperly veiled women should be made to feel unsafe."
For what? Ooh. Like, I mean, we know why. I don't know why I keep asking these questions.
It's control.
It's control. That's all it is.
Yeah, and it's so frustrating because, you know, we live in a country that, you know, quote unquote, there is a divide between, you know, church and state.
In theory.
Yeah. Like, it's not really true. Religion has infiltrated our government 100%, mm-hmm. but we are not a government governed by religion.
We're not a theocracy.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not exactly. a full blown theocracy. Yeah.
And that's the thing is, like, I feel like it's such a sensitive topic to discuss because I think that, like, with anything, it's about your own autonomy. And if it's your own religious choice to wear a hijab, that's great. But if it's your decision to not, that should be okay too. And you shouldn't be made to feel unsafe because you've made a different choice for yourself.
Choice is the operative word, right? Yeah. It's like you should be able to choose. It's the same thing, kind of, that I feel like people on the right, these Christian nationalists who are becoming bolder and bolder and literally saying, "We are Christian nationalists.
Yeah.
We want to make this a Christian state." Like, you know, you've got like your Boberts, your Marjorie Taylor Greens who are actually like saying these things, right? And it's similar to that, where it's like your religion doesn't get to dictate what I do. Do you. I'm happy for you to do you. And I get that it is part of your religion. I know because I came from that religion. Like,
right,
it is
to recruit and spread the word and all of that.
To proselytize and, you know, I get it. I understand that. However, it doesn't get to control policy. It doesn't get to control the everyday American's day-to-day life. Or it shouldn't, right? Because it's just like, I don't subscribe to your beliefs.
Right.
And that's how it should be. And it scares me very much that we could go that direction in this country as well. And it makes me very, very sad that that's something that people in other countries have to live with.
Yeah.
Like it's just not fair. And it makes it so much harder for those who do want to practice in a respectful way. Right. Like it, and I feel the same way about Christians in the United States who just like want to just live their faith and practice in a respectful way.
I feel like there's
way.
Almost like an urge for those people that do want to practice just peacefully to be more extreme. Like, it's almost like you can't just kind of sit in your own little peaceful bubble because it's turned into something. It's become so like divisive, I feel like, that it almost makes people like there's like pressure to be more outspoken because you feel threatened.
I definitely think there is, or they spend all of their time trying to say like, we're not like those guys.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they're like, we're not like that. Like, there are Christians who aren't like that. That's what I see a lot. It's like, it's not all of us, right? Like, I see that all the time.
And we know we're not saying, and like, ugh.
But it is a thing where it's just like, yes, but this is what happens whenever you have people pushing so hard to force their belief system on other people.
Yes.
Like, this is what's going to happen.
Well, and there has to be respect that different people have different experiences with mm-hmm. their religion. And not just, it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Like, you can't fight against it when you don't understand what someone's personal experience is or was
and
in that religion.
It just doesn't make any sense either. I mean, just even from a religious perspective,
yeah.
I understand that, like, I don't know all the tenets of the Muslim religion or Islam or anything like that. I understand that I'm not a scholar
right.
on that. But
this is the podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist yes. perspectives.
I feel like we haven't said it in a long time, but we are not women's history majors.
No. Though a lot of professors listen to us and, like, people
surprising.
That are so much smarter than us. So, like, hi. Welcome.
But I can say from, you know, my own personal experiences within, like, evangelical Christianity in the United States is it doesn't even make sense from a religious perspective, because forcing people to adhere to your religious tenets doesn't make them any more holy. Like,
right.
you're not getting God points. Like, they're not going to go to heaven because, like, you are forcing this one aspect in, you know, at the end of the day, something that is a pretty superficial aspect, in my opinion.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
The way that you dress has
yeah.
nothing to do with the way that you practice or who you are. You know, it has nothing to do really with whether or not you're going to get into heaven or not. Right.
Well, right. Like, and I think that should be the idea. But I think that there are a lot of religions and religious sects out there where there is a very big tie between modesty and being able to reach heaven, you know what I mean? All of that kind of stuff. And
right,
I,
but just forcing that one thing isn't going to force people
certainly.
To do all of the other things that
yeah.
they need to do to live a quote-unquote holy life.
It's almost like a band-aid for the situation. Yeah,
yeah, it's all about the comfort of the people who are in charge and the comfort of men largely, because they don't want to feel
precisely
a certain way about having to see you walk around without your hijab on.
Yeah. And I really think that, like, the respect can go both ways. Like, when I went to that Catholic wedding earlier, uh-huh. like past summer or whatever, like, Max was freaking out because everyone was getting up for communion, and mm-hmm. he was like, well, we should go. And I was like, no, it's actually, like, disrespectful because we don't believe in this religion anymore. If we were to just, like, act like we did and went through the motions.
Exactly.
That's more disrespectful than us keeping our seats, bowing our heads, and just sitting and letting everyone else have their moment.
That is also how I feel. I think that that's what I'm trying to say is, like, if you really adhere to these beliefs and
yeah.
they are sacred to you and they mean something to you, then by all means practice, because that's important to you. But by forcing other people who don't feel the same way about your religion, who don't adhere to any of the other tenets,
policing it doesn't make any sense.
Right. It doesn't make any sense. And in fact, it feels disrespectful to your religion
yeah.
to have people just putting on a show for your benefit.
Exactly.
Like, if this person didn't feel compelled to wear the hijab, you shouldn't make that. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
to me,
exactly.
Other than that, it's not really about their holiness or lack thereof. It's
yeah.
not really about your religion. It's about control.
Yeah. And I forgot to mention this in my notes, but while just talking about it, I remembered there was a reporter, and I don't remember if she was English, but I can't remember where she was from exactly. But she had scheduled an interview with some sort of political power.
Oh, yeah.
Iran.
I talked about it last week.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes. And she refused to wear the uh-huh. headdress. That's right. You totally did talk about it. But I was talking about it with Max as well. And, like, that is something I was reading, that, you know, a lot of American tourists and things like that will kind of, like, just comply to these things. And there was I think it was in that opinion piece that they were talking about how it's important for other people to not necessarily do that when they're visiting the country,
yeah,
and stuff, to kind of be able to stand against that. And it is hard because you want to be respectful.
You want to,
you know,
be respectful of the culture. This isn't a very interesting question, actually, because it's like, you want to be respectful of the culture, but what do you do when that culture is oppressive?
Yeah.
Right? Like whenever those things are actually actively oppressing people. Because for me, if it was a thing, like I would never go into a holy place without adhering to whatever rules are imposed in that place. Like I would never, you know,
coverings in a lot of ways are implicated in a lot of different religions. Like my mom had to have her head covered in mass as a little girl. So it is something that
like
pops
up. If I were to go, I know that there are certain places in Israel where it's like, if you were to go into this temple or into this place, that you should have your head covered. I would adhere to that thing because I'm like, I'm stepping into someone's actual like religious practice.
Yeah.
But just existing to force your religious beliefs on people who are just existing.
Yeah.
In a space.
Yeah.
Feels not right. And I don't know. I mean, that's an interesting thing. I open that up to listeners to comment on because of course you want to be respectful of other people's cultures. You don't want to do things that are
offensive. But you also want to stand up for the people that are fighting and trying so hard and losing their lives, you know, to have this freedom of expression. I was just thinking, I'm off the rails today because it's our last one. It's so okay. I'm just saying what comes to my mind. Have you seen Sex and the City 2?
I was just thinking about that. That always comes to mind where Samantha's
Kim Cattrall,
like,
yeah, she's wearing like nothing. And everyone's like, oh my God, girl.
Yeah. And it's hard because you watch that and
she went too far.
Yeah. And part of you is like, yeah, this is their culture. This feels disrespectful to their culture. But then at the same time, if you're like, but their culture is based and rooted in such like patriarchy and misogyny and like,
ooh. And Samantha don't give a fuck. She's like, stare at him.
Probably should have though in that movie.
All right. Yeah. Oh yeah. I forgot that like a bunch of shit goes down there. Is that is it the first or the second one? I think it's the first one where Charlotte poops her pants.
Yeah. In Mexico.
She Poughkeepsied in her pants.
Yeah.
I watch those movies on airplanes all the time.
They're so bad.
They're so bad. But that's what I need on an airplane.
Yes. It's an airplane movie for sure. Yeah.
Okay. All right. We will stop chattering for a very quick break and then we're going to be right back.
Okay.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
And we are back.
Okay, so I wanted to talk about something that is both, it's bittersweet. It's good and bad. So thousands of Virginia high school students walked out of school on Tuesday, September 27th, to protest proposed guidelines put forward by Governor Glenn Youngkin that would restrict protections for transgender students. Students from nearly 100 high schools staged walkouts across the state to protest against the new policies, holding signs criticizing the guidelines and waving pride flags in support of their LGBTQ plus peers. So if adopted, school districts would tighten restrictions on trans students. The policy reversal is under a 30-day public comment period. So it hasn't passed yet. It's got like 30 days, I guess, to pass. It would require students to use school facilities that match their biological sex and would require schools to defer to parents about students' names, nicknames, and pronouns.
Yeah, this was a lot like the one that we talked about a few weeks ago.
That one is very
similar. You have to like go through the parents, get the permission, have a counseling session, sign off. It's just a very intrusive process.
And this one is like they have to have a written permission. Like the parents have to fill out a form, like, and it has to be turned in, and only then would the teachers be allowed to refer to the student by even a nickname. Like,
that's absurd to me. that's absolutely absurd because, I mean, if you really want to, like, think about it, like, Maddie is a nickname. When I went by Maddie growing up, like, that doesn't make any sense to me because when you put nickname into the equation, you're opening, it's a very broad.
Right. So we can't call somebody who's named Christopher Chris.
Can't call you Keegs.
Right. Like, it doesn't really make any sense.
Doesn't make any sense.
In past policies, it was recommended that the school refer to students' preferred identities without asking parents first. Like, they were like, this is your student. Part of your job is to develop a rapport and a relationship with that student.
And make sure they feel safe if they do come to you. And
So
react appropriately in a way that you're there for the student.
At one school, West Potomac High, walkouts were organized by the student-led Pride Liberation Project, which is a Virginia-based LGBTQIA advocacy group. Every student wants to tell their parents about themselves. The reason that so many can't is because if they do, they'll be subjected to abuse and homelessness. And this was the Pride Liberation Project. They tweeted that out.
Yeah.
Luckily, it does appear as though Youngkin will face an uphill battle. Even if the proposal gets approved, recent federal protections for transgender students allow them to use whatever bathroom matches their gender identity. And Democrats from the state are already alleging that the guidelines would violate the Virginia Human Rights Act, which protects individuals in public settings, including schools, from discrimination on the basis of gender. Mm. So,
hopefully that works.
Hopefully it doesn't end up passing, or even if it does, it's going to face a lot of issues down the road.
I'm always so proud when there are these like student-led protests and walkouts and things like that.
And
it's
that's
inspiring to me.
Why I said it was bittersweet is because the fact that this is happening, so as we've mentioned previously, anti-transgender bills are cropping up all across the country. According to the Washington Post, at least 300 pieces of legislation have been proposed seeking to bar transgender athletes from school sports, limit teachers' ability to offer lessons on gender identity and sexuality, pull books featuring LGBTQ characters from school shelves, and criminalize the provision of hormone therapy to minors. On July 1st alone, 10 anti-LGBTQ laws went into effect, all targeting schools. So I say it's bittersweet because it is so upsetting and sad that this is happening in the first place and that it is happening on such a huge scale all at once. You know, something I was reading was the students don't feel safe outside of school because they see all of this anti-LGBTQ legislation being pushed and pushed and pushed, especially in a lot of these red states.
Right.
And then these things, these protections that were in place to protect them while they're at school, they're starting to see that those are going away too. And that is so scary. And that makes me so sad. But
kids have enough reason to be scared at school.
Absolutely. But it also makes me so proud to see kids standing up for their rights and fighting back and organizing.
And it just shows so much care too.
Yes.
Like, we've come so far as a younger generation because we grew up in a time that was so outwardly homophobic and transphobic.
Yeah.
I've been listening to the Always Sunny podcast. Mm-hmm. They go back and like watch old episodes and then talk about it. And they're like, oh my God, we would never like do this now.
It's changed so fast.
There's a lot of things. And so as a person who, you know, came from a time where you would say if something was weird, it was gay, seeing a bunch of kids, instead of bullying somebody for those things, they're actually standing up for each other for those things. So to me, it just shows so much love and acceptance. And like, that's what makes me so happy. It makes me so sad to see their sadness and anger and frustration. But I'm like, wow, look how far we've come as like a younger society that we don't have. Like, that's not a thing that we have to bully each other about, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Well, my last topic is very on brand for both of us. So I wanted to discuss Netflix's Monster Dahmer situation. Ooh,
I tried
literally
to watch
watched
it.
The first 20 minutes and couldn't do it.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie to you. I watched the first two episodes and
want to say it one more time.
By the end of the second episode, I was just like, this feels
icky.
It felt like trauma porn to me. Exploitative.
Yeah.
I did feel, when I was watching it, because in the first episode, you can kind of be like, oh, spoiler. So I guess if you're watching it, fast forward. But like,
this is real life. Come on.
In the first episode, you can kind of be like, okay, he got away, right? But the rest of the victims don't. And I just kept thinking about like, what would their family members feel like
There's been a lot of family members that have started to come forward as well. And I'm going to talk about that. So I didn't even get through the first episode. Yeah. I turned it off because I guess spoiler, but the first kind of like big scene in the show is that there's a man that is kind of just being kept in this apartment. And it's like a game of cat and mouse.
Right,
almost.
He was lured there.
And it's very, and then once he's inside, he's still lured and played with and toyed around with
and
it made it feel uncomfortable. Yeah, and it was so triggering to my anxiety. It was like, oh my God, he can't get out. He can't get out. Oh my God, which is a huge fear of mine.
It's
scary. That was a little much for me. And I was like, I don't need this right now. So I'm going to turn this off. I know the story very well. And I'm going to say before we talk about a lot of the negatives, I'm actually going to mention some of the positive reviews and things that critics have been saying. There have been people that have appreciated the fact that the show has highlighted the racism and homophobia within the investigation and within Dahmer himself about how he chose his victims. Uh-huh. Because at this time, and still now, I'm sure, but if you were a black man, if you were a gay man, if you were a black gay man, your case would not be taken as seriously by police officers. I mean, the gay stuff was icky to them. They didn't want to talk about it and look into it.
Even beyond that is... You know, I've seen the documentary about Dahmer, which is much better. If you're wanting to learn or something about this case, there is a documentary where they interview a lot of the people who lived in the apartment building.
Yeah.
And
it's not as grotesque.
It's not as grotesque. And also it really highlights and is something that I do feel like the show is trying to do. Highlights not only the victims and their cases not being taken seriously, but all of the people, mostly people of color, who lived in his building or around Jeffrey Dahmer, who knew something was wrong and tried continuously to get help and get support. And because of who they were never taken seriously.
Yeah. It's a story of society failing so many people. It's absolutely devastating. And I think that that's like Ryan Murphy, in my opinion, is known for uber dramatizing things that are already really terrible.
I was worried it was going to be really campy, which it doesn't feel campy.
It doesn't feel campy, but it feels like it's just like, we're going to take you down to the pits of hell and I'm dragging you with me, you know, and all this kind of stuff.
You're watching, at the end of the day, you're watching it for entertainment. It is a show that is meant to, you know,
and
I
didn't feel entertained, so I turned it off.
I love horror movies. I love that kind of thing. Obviously, like, I enjoy that feeling of being scared and stuff like that. I don't want to watch somebody's real life trauma for my entertainment like
it
that.
It feels voyeurish.
Yeah.
That's a word.
Voyeuristic.
So there was a family member by the name of Rita Isbell, whose brother Errol Lindsay was one of Dahmer's victims, who was depicted in the show without her consent. And she said watching the show was very re-traumatizing to her.
I'm not surprised by that because I know who that is. And I saw the clip in the trailer where there was the reenactment. And the clip in the trailer looks exactly like her. And
it's
like, if they didn't
same outfit, same everything.
Yeah. If they didn't get her consent to do that, that is, I would be very triggered
by that.
And
that's a big thing for me. After I watched it without really knowing any of these things. And then it was after I watched, I started seeing it. And I was just like, it was a reason why, you know, I love Judy Garland. I was like, I'm not going to watch Judy if Liza says no. You know what I mean? I was very against it for that same reason. Errol's cousin elaborated on Rita's statements on Twitter, saying that the production didn't notify any of the family members and really drove home how they kind of found out about the show when everyone else did and how
I don't like that.
Awful it's been to watch. People are also calling out the show for exploiting Black trauma. And then, like I said, on the flip side, saying that they're appreciating the fact that they're telling these stories of these victims and things like that. But I think that it is something to point out that it, because to me, it was the stretch of time in that scene and the amount of pain and agony. I can understand how that would be an issue.
I wouldn't want to watch it as a family member of the victim. Like, and that's kind of where I get to. I understand that Dahmer is such a fascinating character because he is so outside the norm of regular, right?
And, like, and I think
interesting to see. And I understand why things keep getting made from his perspective because we are so struggling to understand how a person's brain can work like that. However, I don't think that there have been... It's kind of like there was that Ted Bundy documentary on Amazon that was from the perspective of the victims and was very much
victim-focused. It was called like the women...
I can't remember what it was called. I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed that one a lot, too. But then we have the Zac Efron Bundy movie where we're showing him as this sexy guy.
And I feel like if it's possible to do a Dahmer movie that is more from... Because I see that the show was attempting to make sure that the victims had sympathy, attempting to make sure that the people who lived in the house were getting, or in the apartment were getting their due in terms of like they were
trying to do. Because you have to tell the story.
But... if there's a way to tell the story that was more victims focused and less Dahmer focused.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. I think there's a way to do it and we're doing it wrong. I think that people have gotten high off of this like true crime craze and that kind of sickens me. I think that you shouldn't. And I just think that we need to change even just the terminology of like entertainment and things like that, because I think that we have to be able to, like, we should always be disturbed by the things that we're intaking. I think that that's just human. We should never be, like, desensitized to these horrible things that we watch. But I think that it really is the responsibility of these filmmakers who can understand that while there is this huge hype and expectations, there's ways to be, you know, to make good filmmaking and good storytelling without it glorifying the killers or tainting the memory of the victims or being salacious. Like ID is really known for being very salacious. Yes. Their wording is not great.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think that there just needs to be more responsibility in all of those communities because it is so publicized that people need to start telling the right story. And I do understand because we also do need to learn to understand the people that had the struggles that Jeffrey Dahmer did.
Yes.
I don't know how we would fix it. Like, I don't know if someone was like, I'm going to kill someone. I'd be like, I don't know what to do with you.
Well, and it's more than that. I think that that's what makes it so fascinating. It's what makes him so fascinating.
Yeah.
It's like his impulses and all of that stuff is so strange.
Yeah.
That like we want to understand it.
Yes.
I get why it keeps happening, but I just feel like we sometimes lose sight, this true crime craze.
Yeah.
We lose sight that like these are people. Like his victims are people. They have family members that are still alive that have to live with the fact that this person did these absolutely heinous things to
and
their family
members. And we're upcycling
the
story again. And people are going to be calling the family, asking for interviews and comments and all this kind of stuff.
It's just, you're dredging it up over and over again. I will say, Evan Peters is great.
I love Evan Peters.
He
comes into the store sometimes. He's sold a bunch of stuff. Like one day, I saw my friend. I was like, oh, nice shirt. She's like, thanks. It was Evan Peters. I bought it as soon as he left the store.
I bet. Yeah. He is really good in this movie.
He's played a lot of serial killers. That's the one thing. I'm like, okay, can we see a different note?
Yes, true.
I would like to see some verity.
Yes.
I loved him in Mayor of...
Easttown. Yeah, he's great in that.
He was so great in that. And I do have to say... speaking about a Ryan Murphy true crime story, I saw the Versace one.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked it.
Oh, yeah. I didn't watch it, but yeah, I've heard that those are
I would
good.
Still recommend it. I thought that one was actually really well done. And I feel like that's almost a story that there hasn't been enough exploration into the background of those people where it was very eye-opening. And I don't remember. I remember there being some scenes that were very intense, but I don't remember it being like torture porn.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? And it... Yeah, I will say it continues to feel like that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, just like you feel this trauma of the frustration from the public about the lack of police response. Mm-hmm. Because in the second episode, it's the one where the 14-year-old boy escapes and the cops give him back.
Yes. And oh my God, I hate that story. See, yeah. I don't think I can watch that. Like,
it's awful. Oh. Yeah, it's awful. It's really awful. And so, yeah, I wouldn't recommend watching that show. It's...
I mean, like, I feel like everyone who's going to watch it has watched it. The thing has been watched over like 10 million times or something like that.
Yeah, curiosity is a powerful thing.
And I get it. And I think there's a lot of people that don't think about those kinds of things when they're consuming their true crime and whatever. But I'm here to say, let's be conscious about our crimey habits and what we consume and how we think about these stories and process that information.
Agree.
All that fun stuff. So, well, what time are we at?
We're at 42 minutes.
I knew it. I was like, it's going to be a 45 minute mini for sure. It's still less than an hour, so it's a mini.
So I'm not going to give my big goodbye on this episode.
Can you give a mini goodbye?
I will, yes, because I'm going to give my goodbye on the next episode, but because I don't know if everyone listens to both episodes every week, I do want to just say that I have really loved being your host, your co-host on this show for the last 4.5 years. You have all been such incredible, wonderful listeners. This has been such an amazing community to be a part of, and you've always made me feel so welcome. And even when I've made mistakes, you've never made me feel less than for any of the mistakes I've ever made on this show. And I appreciate you all so much. I'm going to miss doing this every week. And I hope that you continue to reach out to me anytime. I'm always so excited to hear from you. I'm going to stop because I'm crying. So,
yeah, we have another episode to do and we're both in tears already. So, you all know the spiel. Listen to a past episode and listen to everything. Review if you want to, yada, yada, yada. I don't think I can do the ending right now. So with all of that being said, we encourage you to rage on. Bye.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's Hypothetical.